This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachel. The battle for Standing Rock is not over. The Standing Rock Sioux tribe and their supporters have been fighting the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline under a dammed-off portion of the Missouri River near their land. Now the tribe says the next step in the battle will happen in court. This after Donald Trump signed an executive order allowing the construction of the pipeline. Last week, more than 70 people were arrested on charges of rioting and trespassing on Standing Rock. Journalist Jenny Monet was among those arrested. She's been covering efforts of environmentalist, indigenous people, and others at Standing Rock for months and joins us now. Jenny Monet, welcome to the State of Things.
Oh, thank you for having me.
First of all, tell us about these arrests. What happened and where were you?
Sure. The arrest happened on February 1st, last Wednesday, and it was another mass arrest that often happens here at Standing Rock over the course of the movement. What we had was a group of very impassioned water protectors who set up a very short-lived camp across on a bluff right across from the main Ocheti Shikoe camp. And these people who are behind this action, they represent some of the more impassioned water protectors who remain camped out here at Standing Rock. They're the ones who have endured some of the sub-freezing conditions here in the North Dakota winter. Many of them have been here since August. Some of them are residents of Standing Rock. And these are water protectors who not only are so devoted to the pipeline battle at hand, but also the greater struggles that have stemmed from this movement. As it's often been said, this is more than just a pipeline battle. It's also one for these water protectors, one about their indigenous sovereignty and rights.
And it's one that seemed to have been won when the Corps of Engineers, the Army Corps of Engineers, late last year said that they were not going to pursue or issue permits. So it seemed like it was over and people began to decamp. Tell us now what's happening, because there's some confusion about this executive order and whether, in fact, the pipeline will go forward, but also, protesters moving in both directions.
Yeah, I think that on December 4th, what we saw here at Standing Rock was, of course, what you said, this this groundswell of support and celebration over the Department of Army's decision to deny the easement to Energy Transfer Partners and its partner Dakota Access, the pipeline builder of the project. But I think at that time, there was also just a great awareness that this was a celebrated victory, but in the larger battle, and that everyone knew coming into a Trump administration that it was going to be a fight in that would be moved to the courts. And that really is where the focus is right now. There is a lot of uncertainty because what we've seen just in the very early days of the Trump administration is an extreme reversal of some of the actions that took place under the Obama administration, that entered an environmental impact statement that was ordered by the Department of Army on December 4th is now being aggressively challenged by the Trump administration. And what you have here in North Dakota are local politicians who are strongly advocating for that reversal of the EIS statement, calling for an expedient review of the EIS to greenlight, essentially, the pipeline, which is near completion at this stage.
And, of course, that is where some of the confusion is, that this executive order does not by itself allow the pipeline to go forward. There are administrative and regulatory barriers that are still in place.
That's correct. And I think, from the tribe standpoint here at Standing Rock, this will always be an issue that will be vigorously litigated in the courts. And, I've spoken, at length with some of the tribe's legal team, with Earth Justice. And it's a process that might seem imminent at this point, but it also has to be just cause or proven reason as to why this environmental impact statement should be fast-tracked without giving the proper kind of review that the Department of Army recognized back in December to say, let's hit the pause button and just review this for a minute and look at treaty rights, which is, a momentous occasion for Indian country to have federal agencies say, let's examine treaty rights, but also the environment.
And at the moment, it is quite possible that the Trump administration would prevail. And so what does that do, the fact that that this may be reversed, that the victory in December may well be reversed? What does that do to the resistance movement? Because I know there's some confusion there and even some controversy on whether or not to continue on the ground at Standing Rock.
Yeah, so I can answer that by beginning just by giving you a picture of what the situation on the ground looks like right now. In mid-January, what you had was a unanimous decision by the tribal council calling for the closure of the network of encampments that helped swell this movement that grew to as many as 14,000 people by some accounts in early December. By this time, it's hard to gauge because things are in such flux, but it's believed that there might be anywhere between 400 to 500 people remaining in the two remaining encampments, the Acheti Shikoe, which is the main camp, and then the one on tribal land known as the Rosebud Camp, which is just south of the Cannonball River. And both of those camps sit at the confluence of the Missouri and Cannonball Rivers, which is a known floodplain. And that was what somewhat prompted the call to clear the camps. Both on a state and tribal level, you had officials expressing concerns. But also there's been just, I think, some loss of support within the nearby communities situated close to the camps from area tribal residents who have grown weary of, you know, the repeated actions by the water protectors that often turn violent, almost always by the hands of law enforcement. But also there's this ongoing bridge blockade that has really stymied everyday life for the residents who live near this reservation, Morton County border, where they've now had to endure, you know, a longer detour and a disruption of their daily life due to this roadblock. It's also just very humiliating, this roadblock. It's just, you know, laced with razor wire and these Jersey blockades, which are these large, you know, concrete blocks. And, you know, it just kind of lends a very prison-like mentality in people who, you know, really love their homeland here.
We are talking about the ongoing battle for Standing Rock today on The State of Things. Talking with Jenny Monet. She is a reporter who was arrested recently at Standing Rock, where their resistance does continue, although things are changing over time. What's happening, Jenny, to those who are leaving? Not everybody is going home, right?
That's correct. It is in flux, as I said earlier, and there has been a February 22nd deadline that has recently been set by the Army Corps of Engineers, saying that they're closing the camps. That certainly generated a lot of tension among the remaining water protectors who have vowed to stay. In transition, what we're seeing are potentially new camps forming on lands that are out of way of the floodplain and that are also situated on private lands that are on the reservation. For instance, the neighboring Cheyenne River Sioux tribe, who was an early adopter of this movement, is days away, if they've not already sealed the lease of private land just around the bend from the main encampment. So there's been a commitment for the movement to stay. I've certainly received a lot of questions from people saying, is it over? And the short answer to that is no, it's not over. And you definitely have a contingency of water protectors here who have vowed to stay as long as people with Dakota Access remain at that drill pad at the easement of the at the Missouri River.
As you pointed out, Jenny, there's an awful lot at stake here, from tribal rights to the rights of local people of all kinds in the United States of America to have sovereignty over their land versus the fossil fuel industry, a very powerful lobby. And yet there are very few reporters. You're one of the few reporters who remain at the scene. First of all, tell us about your arrest and what's going to happen to you. And then in terms of the coverage, what you've seen over time.
Sure. Well, I would just say that I'm actually a little discouraged over my arrest because it's really absorbed a lot of my attention just in fighting for my First Amendment rights and calling out some of the mistruths that I'm just now discovering as I continue to kind of share my experience. I just learned yesterday that a report in the Bismarck Tribune quotes the North Dakota lieutenant commanding officer from the action of the sweep on last Wednesday, denying the fact that I produced my press credentials, which is false and misleading. And so, you know, it's just having to stay on top of these sort of developments, which I've kind of seen and paid witness to over the course of the nearly 6 months that I've reported on this story on the arrest of other water protectors. I'm a journalist here just trying to do my job, and at the same time now being impeded by the fact that now I'm having to fight my own battle, essentially, here at Standing Rock. And it's a detriment because, as you've said, there's so little coverage coming out of Standing Rock right now. What we saw in early December was, you know, a mass media circus, as we often see when things get heightened. And that kind of parachute-style journalism, while, you know, not uncommon for Indian country, it's extreme also because if I were not here, I think in its place what you have is a lot of advocacy media on the ground, which is equally, I think, helpful to support movements like Standing Rock. But what gets missed are, you know, some of the on-the-ground research and, you know, just hard-nosed fact-checking and writing that goes into staying on top of a story as complex as Standing Rock. And that's why I chose to embed myself out here in December.
I'm glad you did. Thank you so much for talking with us, Jenny Monet. Thanks, Jenny.
Sure. Thank you, Frank.
Jenny Monet is an independent Indigenous journalist. She's been covering events at Standing Rock. Just ahead, a conversation with composer Philip Glass on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.